Dr. Gwen Show, where you come to be inspired, educated, and empowered to live a passionate and effective life on purpose. The number one podcast show for inspiring women. This is the podcast where we support you in living your best life ever, even while raising happy, healthy kids. Tired of feeling stuck in a rut with nowhere to turn for resources and advice? We can help. Achieve your best life ever by listening to our podcast show. Introducing the woman who believes it's possible to be totally fulfilled in all circumstances of life, the host of the Dr. Gwen Show, the Dr. Gwen.
So welcome everyone to the Dr. Gwen Show. This morning we have Jerry Chase, and Jerry is from the law office of Jerry Lyons Chase. Jerry has been a practicing attorney for over 28 years, and she has done general law practices, currently facilitating small business owners, and she has done also some estate work and family work. And Jerry, thank you so much for joining us on the show, and we'd like to welcome you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
All right, great. So I also noticed, Jerry, that you practice law in Maryland and in Virginia. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'm a member of the bar of both of those jurisdictions.
Great. So today what we want to do is to talk about some legal matters that may concern families, and particularly moms and women. And to start off, I know in a family situation, when a mom, especially if she's a single mom, there are certain things that are not at the top of her mind when she's planning for the needs of her family and also trying to maintain a full-time position in order to do that. So I'd like to ask you, what do you see as the first and foremost thing that moms or families need to consider in raising their family in regards to legal matters?
One of the things that I think is very critical, especially when you have a single mother and a single parent household, is making sure that the children are taken care of, having a will, having a named guardian for the children, so that if something were to happen, that you have actually expressed your wishes so that the children are taken care of in the way that you'd like them to be taken care of.
Yeah, that sounds great. So when you say a named guardian, is there a particular process that people need to follow in order to get that done?
That can be done through a will, and that's generally the simplest way to do it. A will can be prepared, and we recommend that you name one person as guardian and then name an alternate as well as guardian. And then the will can be changed and updated as often as is necessary. And, for example, someone may be the perfect guardian for a small child, but when they reach the age of teenage years, you may want to change to a different guardian. And if you do it by will, you can change it. You can do a codicil. It can be a flexible document.
Okay, got that. So once a mom prepares her will and it's done, is there anything special that she needs to do with that will? Does she just put it in her drawer and it's good? What is she supposed to do with it?
There are a couple things that can be done. And there's in every jurisdiction in Maryland, you can record the will with the Register of Wills. And it's a fairly nominal fee. It used to be $25. I think it's still in that neighborhood. Well, you record it with the Register of Wills. They keep it for safekeeping. The other thing you can do is leave it at the attorney's office. Leave it with someone you trust. It's not necessarily the best idea to leave it in your own home unless someone has access to the home, knows where it is. If you have a friend, a relative that you trust, you can just let them know, I left my will in the top drawer of my file cabinet. Here it is. One thing that is not recommended, but it's actually a common practice, is putting it in your safety deposit box.
Right.
If you put it in your safety deposit box and you are the only person that has access to it, that box would be sealed at the time of your death.
Okay.
and we would need to have the register of wills actually go to the bank to open the box.
Uh-huh.
It's a fairly complex process, and it's just simpler not to put it in a safe deposit box.
Well, that's awesome because, you know, I've heard people say just the opposite of that. So, and what you're saying just makes really great sense to not do it that way. So regarding the will situation, if apparently, let's say a mom has a bank account, right? You would, of course, advise her to put all the information containing that on the will as well.
No, actually, I wouldn't. Not on the will itself, because bank accounts can change. People change bank accounts relatively frequently. One of the things that sometimes we do with a will is do a personal property information list and include that, because that can be updated without the formality of a will. A will has to be witnessed by two individuals, and it doesn't, it's not that simple to do. A bank account you can do, you can change it by just going to the bank. And then oftentimes what happens is people don't go back to and update their will every time they update their bank account. See, we would want the will to be somewhat general in nature to address the specific items. One of the things that I do recommend is having that trusted friend, relative, aware of your bank accounts. And the other issue that's becoming much more of a common issue that never existed before, people are now doing so much more of their banking, of their credit cards, all of that online. And now, and many people go with a completely paperless system.
Yeah.
If you receive all your bills through a paperless, someone would actually have to have access to your internet profile to obtain all of that, which raises a whole host of privacy concerns. And if you do that, that's fine. But again, it goes back to you need to have a list of where your debts are, where your assets are, how to get into that information. I'm actually had that conversation recently with my father, because as my parents are getting older, my mother doesn't handle the finances. My father does everything online. And quite frankly, I don't even know where the banks, where the assets are. So it's important that a list is kept, a password is kept. That could be something that you'd put in the safe deposit box, perhaps. But it's, again, it really is important to have a trusted person to work with.
Yes, I definitely can see why. And for individuals, now that we've raised the question about bank account and other relatives, so to speak, if, let's say a mom has her bank account, she's the only person that's listed as the owner on that bank account, will that list protect her assets from being probated?
No.
So what would a mom need to do in such a situation to prevent all that, the whole legal process?
One of the things that people typically do with bank accounts, you can set up what's known as a payable on death account, which means that upon the owner's death, the account automatically becomes transferred to another person.
Okay.
It's similar to a joint account, but it doesn't give that second person the power to sign on the bank account to withdraw money as they would on a general joint account.
I got that. And people would be able to see an attorney for that, or is that something they could do on their own, or how does that work?
Setting up the bank accounts is done through the branch. You can just go
I'm
into
speaking it. About this, the payable on death account?
Absolutely. You could go to the branch and set up the bank accounts however you like. There's different options, the payable on death, there's the joint accounts, et cetera. One of the things I do want to speak to is the issue of probate. In the state of Maryland, the probate process is a relatively straightforward process. People are concerned and people have heard, avoid probate at all costs. I actually would not necessarily encourage that. It depends on the circumstances of each individual, whether or not it makes sense. But the inheritance tax rate in the state of Maryland is 1% for lineal descendants. If you're passing property to what's known as a collateral descendant, in other words, somebody that is not your child, not your parent, not your grandchild, not your grandparent, but to a sister or to a nephew, to an unrelated person, then the inheritance rate is at 10%. It becomes more of an issue. But for a mother passing her assets to her child, it often isn't that great of an amount that would justify giving up the control that you would have, and also putting in, there's ways we can treat assets to have them not be part of the probate estate as well. And oftentimes when people pass, much of their assets goes outside of probate, the bank accounts, for example. Life insurance would go outside of the estate for the most part. If a beneficiary is named on a life insurance policy, it's not part of the probate estate.
Right, right. Okay, awesome. So that's some really great information there. Now, I want to look a little bit at living trust. What is that, and is that needed?
A living trust is a trust that's created to take effect while the person is alive, as opposed to a testamentary trust, which would take effect at the person's death. Living trust, I think, can be beneficial. Again, it's something the individual would want to take a look at for their particular circumstance, as opposed to a general endorsement of living trust. Sometimes they work very well. Uh-huh. Sometimes they're not necessarily the best vehicle. You do give up a measure of control when you put your assets in a trust.
Right. And so as far as a mom with small kids, is that something that you would recommend to have done or not?
What I always recommend to a mother with small children is doing a will that sets up a guardian setting up a trust inside of the will. In other words, naming a trustee and stating in the will that the property will pass into the trust for the minor children, and it will be managed by an individual, again, that trusted friend or relative. Could be a different trusted friend or relative. The guardian is not necessarily the person who is the right person as the guardian may or may not be the right person to control the funds. They don't have to be the same. They can be. Often they do overlap. But naming the trust inside of the will, it gives you the flexibility, and you can set up inside of the trust what happens with the money. If you pass and your child is 10, for example, you'd want to sit down and think about when would you want the child to have access to those funds, at the age of 18, at the age of 25, and suppose you have a child that's 10 and a child that's 2, would you want each one of them to get them at a certain age, or would you like the whole trust to terminate and have the principal dispersed at the youngest child reaching an age? These are things that are very specific and very individual. People have very different ideas. Some people want it only for health and welfare. Some people want it for education. Some people only want it for education. Some people feel that at 18, the child will be responsible enough to receive the principal of the trust. Others are very clear that they do not want their child receiving the money at the age of 18.
Right, right, definitely, right. Okay, fantastic. So now let's turn our attention now to what moms do on a day-to-day basis. Mom-kid relationship and the responsibilities of parents for their children's actions. You know, oftentimes when kids do stuff and they get in trouble, the parents are legally responsible. I would say it's probably all the time. Is there anything that you could recommend for parents to reduce their liability in terms of controlling their kids' behaviors or the consequences of their kids' behaviors?
Well, one of the things that I recommend to everyone, obviously addressing this from the legal perspective, mm-hmm. and there's certain things that you must be careful about, which is entrusting your minor children with the automobile. People give their keys to the car to the children, oftentimes when they're not ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then the child gets in an accident. And if the child has been in multiple accidents, it can go back on the parents for entrusting, for being negligent in entrusting that car with the child.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that can happen. It doesn't necessarily happen all the time, but it's one of those things that you want to protect yourself from. And one of the easiest ways is actually through your insurance. Maintaining adequate insurance is critical. And it's
mm-hmm.
actually not that expensive for people to obtain an umbrella liability policy. Many people don't have one,
right.
But it's something to consider, because for usually a very reasonable charge, a premium in the $20, $30 a month, you can obtain coverage up to $1 million for any liability that may happen. So that's something I would definitely recommend. I think it's worth the money.
Right.
As far as protecting oneself from liability, unfortunately, there's not a lot other than teach your children appropriate behavior, which is, of course, critical, and then protect yourself if something does happen. Things do happen. Unfortunately, in modern society, we do have a litigious society. People sue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all I can say is be responsible. Buy adequate insurance to protect yourself.
Yeah. I do think that umbrella liability policy is an excellent idea. And the surprising thing is that it's really not that expensive at all. So for a few extra $1 million, you can get an insurance coverage to that offers some peace of mind for what your kids may or may not do that may harm someone else. So thank you for that advice. Now, the last thing I have regards child support. And I know single moms or even mothers who may be having challenges separated from their husbands may be having some challenges regarding meeting their children's needs through the resources that are provided by their partners, their husbands or significant others, or used to be significant others. So when we deal with child support and custody issues, and I know these two questions are combined in one, if you want to separate it in the response, that is fine. If they can be addressed together, then that's also fine. So when it comes to child support, what are some key advice that you can offer to moms that will help them? I know I've talked to some who are reluctant to file for child support for one reason or another. What are some things that you can advise that would provide some clarity, for example, for moms who may or may not know how to initiate the process and may need some help to know where to go to get that done?
One of the things that I always stress with all of my clients, sometimes people don't want to pursue child support from the ex-partner, ex-spouse, because they're afraid that it may upset the relationship. And unless that person is providing adequate support outside the system, I recommend getting child support through the system.
Mm.
And the child support is actually for the children.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the mother doesn't feel that she personally needs it, I believe mm-hmm. she should still collect it. And if she doesn't need it, put it in a savings account for the child. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. people do need it.
Absolutely.
Most of the time, people need it. One of the services that's provided here in Maryland is the Office of Child Support Enforcement. Any mother or father, if that be the case, can actually go down to the Office of Child Support Enforcement. There's one in each county. And for a fairly nominal fee, again, I believe it's $25, but always check, the fees do change. For $25, can file a case in the child support office. The child support office will then pursue the child support on behalf of the custodial parent. In order to collect the child support, there's certain information that is needed. Income uh-huh. information, the cost of insurance, all of those items. And with income information, they're going to want both the custodial parent's income information as well as the non-custodial parent, the person paying support. So whatever information, joint tax returns are helpful. If you never filed joint tax returns, pay stubs, payroll information, all of that information is needed. So it's uh-huh. always a good idea to collect that information and to keep a record of it.
Right. So you're saying there is actually an office that the parents can go to in order to have the funds collected for them. So in this
Correct.
Particular case, should they have filed for child support before, or is this process the actual process of getting that underway?
It can be done either way. They could have obtained a child support order through a divorce. In most divorce cases, if they're minor children, child support is ordered. If then there's a default in the payment of the child support, it goes through the Office of Child Support Enforcement. And most of the courts in Maryland actually order that the child support be paid through the Office of Child Support Enforcement as opposed to direct pay.
Oh, okay.
And they would actually monitor it. If mm-hmm. there is no divorce, the person can go directly to the Office of Child Support Enforcement and file the paperwork with them to start the case to collect child support.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's some great bit of information there. And I know we didn't talk about the custody issues surrounding parents. And it is a general question regarding that or surrounding that. Do you have any general advice for moms when it comes to custody of the children? Like, for example, if there is a time when the dad is supposed to have the kids and the mom has the kids a certain other time and the other party is not honoring the time that's set up by the court, what is available to the mom in such a situation?
In any divorce case or in any custody order, you always have the right to go back and petition the court to enforce the court order through the court's contempt powers. Mm-hmm. I would caution that is not a simple process and it can take time.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
it does work. And the court, just very simply, will always look at what's in the best interest of the child in determining custody, in determining visitation.
Definitely, and you would definitely recommend that process be done with the help of an attorney to expedite it and to relieve a lot of the unknown that parents may not be aware of in the legal system.
Absolutely, I would recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
In most of the counties in Maryland, they do have the family law assistance program,
mm-hmm.
and at minimum, even if someone is proceeding pro se, in other words, doing the paperwork themselves, I recommend consulting with an attorney. There are certain things that, unfortunately, pro se filers miss, one of which can be very expensive, which is oftentimes they don't request the retirement, and you're entitled to a piece of your spouse's retirement for the years that you're married. And often pro se filers walk in and waive that. And
yeah.
here here, particularly when we have a fair number of people who work for the government agencies, federal retirements can be very valuable. Military retirements are very valuable.
Yeah.
And oftentimes people don't even know that they can make a claim on that, and they waive it. And not to say that waiving it is always a bad idea, but if you're waiving it, it should be in consideration of something.
Definitely. I definitely can see that. And that's some really good advice, because I don't know that that's something that many single moms would think about. Because right now they're thinking about what's now, what's present. They're not looking down, way down in the future, if that's how far down it is, to consider that retirement funds is a part of the benefit that they should have,
right?
Depending on the relationship that they have had. Yeah, go ahead.
If I may, one more thing. The other thing that people can do is use that retirement as a negotiating tactic.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that, you know, that they don't think they need the retirement down the road, they can use their claim for a part of that to negotiate something else, and
right.
use it as a bargaining chip.
Right. That's great. Excellent. Well, Jerry, thank you so much for being on the Dr. Gwen Show and for sharing these insightful comments with our moms. I'm certain that there will be other resources that we'll be able to put out on our blog post. And we will definitely make reference to the information that you have provided here so that moms could have a synopsis of what was discussed. And, Jerry, if anyone needs to get a hold of you in the future and to call you or to request your services, what is a good contact information for them to have?
I can be reached at the Law Office of Jerry Lyons Chase. I have a website, which is glchaselaw.com. Also, my phone number is 410-573-9004.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Jerry, for joining us today. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us. See you next time.
Thank you.